That was a station announcement. Before that, we heard from Radiohead, Street Spirit, the Bends. Barely needs a back announce.
No, we should explain who we are, though.
Yes, Two Tones, yeah. Filling in for Tony Biggs. Big get well card going out to Biggs Wire. Mm. Hopefully we'll hear him on the airwaves next Friday. Yes, get well soon, Biggsy. We're opening up the lines for anyone who has anything to say to us, really.
Yeah, sure.
About society, life, books.
Well, there's a few films. Topics we can get to, but I think we need to bring somebody else in, somebody who's got a gig to plug apart from anything. A feeble smattering of studio applause, please, for Matthew Quatermain.
Thanks, Tone. It's the sack from Oz Stereo group in today.
It does seem it hasn't been intended that way, but it certainly is. There's a huge queue of people out there.
That's right.
Who've been thrown out of that.
And I must say, you know, when they kicked me off Oz Stereo, and it was sad to hear that you went, but I felt much better thinking, God, if they're going to kick Tony Martin off, I don't stand a chance.
Well, there you go. You have, however, bounced back with a series of knockout gigs at the Hampton RSL. Should we just get that out of the way?
Sure, sure. 8:30 on Fridays, down there with Tim Smith, Andy Goodwin and Simon Rogers. We're doing a bit of impro, mm-hmm. Sitting around having a bit of chat about the week's news. We'll look at sport and entertainment, everything like that.
That's tonight from 8:30 at the Hampton, every Friday night. And the beer prices, certainly nothing to be sniffed
at. Look, cheap food, cheap beer, cheap laughs. That's our tagline for this show.
And always good to see a new comedy venue opening up.
Well, attempting to, yeah.
Attempting to. Let's get behind it. I hear there was maybe an incident last week. Is that right? Possibly? Was there some trouble?
Oh, yeah.
Should I not bring this up?
Trev Marmalade turned up late. He was coming down to have a bit of a look, but we'd already gone, and he got cornered by one of the locals, one of the girls that we call Olive, and she cornered him for about 10 minutes, and we were hoping to get him down for one of the nights, and we're not sure we're going to be able to now.
Because Olive won't promise to let him in.
Well, Olive might still be there, yeah. And I don't think we can get Trev back.
Well, we've got some callers online.
Already we've got callers?
Yeah. I've got no idea what they're going to talk about, but right. I think we should just say hello and see how it goes. On line one, we've got Adrian. You there, Adrian?
Hello. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
Good. Good. I promise there is a point to this.
Don't have to.
The Lazy Novelist.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with Jerry Seinfeld's live recording, I'm Telling You for the Last Time?
Yeah. Haven't heard it for a while, but yes.
Mm-hmm. The routine he does on his experiences with Halloween.
What? How does that go?
Essentially, the Halloween costume, which he imagined himself to look like, just like Superman, but it's all loose and flowing. It's got the cheap mask with the elastic band that keeps snapping, all that sort of thing.
Yes.
Essentially, word for word transcribed as a few illustrations. Became a children's book.
Really?
Right.
Smart.
Who was the author of that? Was that Seinfeld himself?
Well, I mean, obviously Seinfeld actually did the routine live, of course.
And he took the money for the children's book too, is what you're saying. It's fairly common now, isn't it? If you've got a television show, your book's there for Christmas as well. The Andrew Denton Enough Rope interview transcripts moves plenty of units each year, doesn't it?
Who would want to sit down and read transcripts of an interview?
Read, like, the interviewee cries? Tears drop on your page.
Brackets, camera zooms in.
The questions that are designed to elicit tears, for the benefit of the reader, we have printed them in red ink.
Well, there you go,
Adrian. That is a whole new genre of lazy, not so much novelist. I guess it is novel, sort of novel like when you think that's a fictional story.
Actually, hang on, I'm just realising something. This also happened again with Jerry Seinfeld. He used to do fantastic routine about what would aliens think if they came down and saw humans. I'm just butchering the routine. Sorry, if it's seeing humans walking around. After dogs picking up their shit and putting them in a bag. Yeah. Who would the aliens think was in charge here? Yeah, now, right. That somebody turned that into... Wasn't there an entire movie based on that concept?
Marley and Me.
Not Marley and Me. There is. It's not Cats and Dogs. I think there was a children's film, and the concept was so similar, either that somebody was sued or in the end it was credited to based on... a stand-up routine and by Jerry Seinfeld.
Wasn't Seinfeld's wife sued because her cookbook was the same as someone else's?
That's right.
It's got cooking in it. I done that.
We've got Campbell. Are you there, Campbell?
I certainly am, Tony. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? Speaking to Matt and Two Tones.
Yes, I know. Double of fun. Look at the budget response from the community television sector.
Yes.
Oh, it's absolute crap. Mm.
How have you been treated?
Absolutely poorly. There was absolutely nothing in there, despite assurances. Instead, the government is spending $140 million to assist viewers in converting to digital.
Right.
And
yet they're not helping the... Campbell, are you at Channel 31?
I certainly am.
And so was the promise... did it relate to the fact that you guys need to have a big infrastructure rollout in order to be... digital compliant, and so that the average viewer can get you with good reception through digital set-top boxes? They were going to help you with that, and then they haven't? Is that what's happened?
I think what the plan that Conroy put forward must have been a Rolls-Royce option, because they've absolutely knocked it back and there's been nothing else in. I mean, my thought is, if they roll back their $140 million to $130 million and... set aside $10 million for community television. That we could fix the problem.
And just for people who don't know, when is the switch off for analog?
2013. So you know, look, it's not far around the corner. And basically, community television in Melbourne has pretty much done everything itself. We've never received any federal funding whatsoever. So the 95 brand new programs that you see every week, you know, that's all community based. We're probably the most Australian broadcaster in television in the country.
For sure.
And so how do things look at the moment? If at this stage, come 2013, that'll be it for Channel 31?
Well, we need to get onto digital as soon as possible. I mean, look, we've got 1.5 million viewers in Melbourne. We've managed to retain them. But if we've got the government spending $140 million to cut our audience, you know, it puts us in a hard basket. If any listeners have got any ideas for campaigns, we're actually having a campaign meeting at 1 o'clock, so...
Can they come?
You would be welcome.
Well, it obviously is a... I mean, Triple R knows exactly the sort of strain that you're feeling, and we feel your pain, in fact, because of, you know, similar digital challenges facing this this sector as well. But certainly to have a promise sort of made off the record and then not followed through must be very frustrating.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, governments aren't there. They don't own the airwaves, put it that way. They're there to govern them for the best interests of the community. And the community interests haven't been met.
No. I mean, well, the thing with digital radio is, I remember when the idea of digital radio was floated, there was a lot of people going, oh, great, it's going to be it's going to open radio up. People who can't afford to get a radio license will finally be heard. And as far as I know, it's basically all the same people, just with digital licenses.
Absolutely.
And I read somewhere that one of the stations, I don't know whether it was a DMG or an Oz stereo station, is actually going to have a digital station that plays nothing but Pink. Like 24 hours a day. Because there clearly isn't enough Pink on the radio. You know, really, we've got to get a new license and a whole new station just to play Pink. Because that's serving a need that's not being catered for at the moment.
If they play Deep Purple as well, it'll be my daughter's two favourite colours 24 hours a day.
I mean, I'm picturing at a stereo, a board meeting, where everyone goes, what about a channel that just plays Summer of 69 by Bryan Adams 24 hours a day?
And of course, Tony Martin, there's been some recent appearances from Tony on Channel 31. If you want to check out the Dave Thornton's Tonight Show, that's there on YouTube, isn't it, Tony?
That was a fine program to go on Studio A. And yes, get behind it, I say.
Absolutely.
Let's Campbell, see it digital.
Thank you very much. Write your letters to your parliamentarians. Write your letters to Steve, to Conroy.
Yep.
And and write your letters to Channel 31 if you've got fundraising and promotion ideas for them.
Yeah. And maybe a slow...
We will keep Bigsy updated. And can I just do a quick hats off?
Yes. Yep.
Hats off to Triple R station manager Kath Fletch. She is one of the most amazing people I have ever seen in this sector. There is a reason that she is so widely respected, you know, across the country. And it'll be Triple R will not be the same, but I'm sure she'll be around in the sector somewhere.
I agree. Hats off to her. But did she ever come up with the idea of just all pink 24 hours a day?
That's true. Well, she is going to be sorely missed, and hopefully the tributes will, I'm sure they'll be running fast and free in the next few months when we finally have to say goodbye. Thank you very much for calling in, Campbell.
No worries, Tony. Take care.
Same.
Thanks,
we've got Andrew on. Hello, Andrew. Are you there? Andrew has had another crack on another line. Are you there, Andrew?
Yes, I certainly am. Hi, guys.
Good.
It must be reassuring to be back on community radio after your ventures into the commercial type.
Well, for one of us, that's true. Although I don't know if Tone was ever on commercial radio. He's kind of had regular spots on the party show throughout his commercial career. But did you ever do community before you went to
a
career?
I did a bit of community radio in New Zealand, in Hamilton, a little bit in Auckland as well. But I've sort of been... I think I'm coming up to my 20-year anniversary of being on the party show a couple of times a year and crapping on and on and on about films with Hedley and Cecil B. DeHirsch, of course. I think he's been doing it since the TMBA era.
Yeah.
I tend to remember that Tony did a very funny little skit with Nick Malloy on about community radio.
Yeah, it's sort of like, what's that phrase about throwing stones in glass houses?
Yeah.
Someone actually told me to bring... Someone requested that I play one of those sketches on this show, and I thought, I don't know about that.
Because it's, I think it really is, it's making a showpiece of the sort of effort I put in at 9:35 this morning where I played the wrong song, I think is exactly what that sort of sketch is aimed at, isn't
well,
it?
Well, no, many of the things in that sketch were things that I had actually done myself.
And well, you could make one of those training programs like John Cluse did. This is what not to do, guys.
Sure.
The freshers.
Have a crack.
Can I say something about books?
Yes.
Yeah.
I used to dabble in fiction some years ago, but I've sort of since then thought that I'll punish humanity by denying people evidence of my genius in perpetuity.
Cop that, humanity!
because I sort of got into the literary scene a bit, and I remember being at a book launch for a children's book in Greville Street years ago, and the publisher came over with a tray of canapes. And I said, I've been wondering about this for quite some time. What's the difference between children's literature and real literature? And I thought she was going to throw the tray at me for a minute there. So that was, you know, like a clanger and a half. So that publisher, of course, was out of bounds for me.
Yeah.
And then I was advised by someone who was making a reasonable living in crime fiction a little bit after that it was essential. The most essential way to get published, to get grants, is to make sure that you schmooze effectively. And if there's one thing I'm not, it's an expert schmoozer. In other words, I have to go to Sydney to all the functions up there to rub shoulders with the people at the Arts Australia who hand out the money up there. Then you've got to go to Adelaide for the festivals, and you've got to roll that on your own bat for the first few years. You know, basically stick your face in people's faces so they know who you are next time you send a submission in, yeah? And I didn't like the thought of that, so, yeah, I gave it away.
Well, it's certainly a view that people hold. I mean, I guess I was fortunate maybe to have had a small amount of profile beforehand. That might have assisted me in getting through a slush pile. But I didn't feel as though I had to go through those hoops. Like, I just...
No.
For me, it was sending in 30,000 words and a synopsis of what was going to happen in the rest of the book that got me... an offer at Text a few years ago.
You're really missing out on the literary scene too, you know. I mean, hanging around, woo, copping a free bookmark.
Yeah, and these canapes, obviously.
Yeah. And the canapes, that's right. Yeah, I'm glad to hear it's not compulsory. Yeah.
I don't think it is compulsory, but I certainly think that it's kind of easy to look at awards and that sort of thing and think that there's a certain group that are always in line for those awards?
I think it's just that the publishing caper is going the way of everything else, which is the marketing department are sort of moving up to the front of the train. When I was speaking this week to the bloke who created the Osbournes, and even he was saying, you know, massive success. He's saying, look, it's really hard to get a TV show made because the first thing they want to know is, how are we going to market this?
And the money side of it. And could I compare Kylie's effort in children's literature to launching a perfume? You've been to Myers, haven't you, and walked through that massive, vast section of, you know, marble, glittering marble, where there's an array of a forest of glass bottles, and they the women, these over made up women, rush up and try to squirt things under your arms and stuff. The profit margins and the marketing and behind that, and using Kylie or J-Lo's, you know, name, and it was very similar to the what would you call it? It's sort of a trinket book, or a we need a new term for these books that the celebrities bring out, don't we?
Yeah, I think the wrong celebrities are doing fragrances. Why not, I don't know, Lucky Grills? Why did he never do a fragrance?
What about Mickey Rourke?
Yes,
he's Mickey Rourke.
You can smell like the wrestler.
Mickey.
Are you wearing Barfly?
I better get back to work, guys. See you later.
Thank you very much.
I love it when you get wound up by the callers.
By the listener.
Yeah. We've got Kevin. Are you there, Kevin?
Oh, good morning, Tony.
How are you, Tony?
I wanted to thank you for mentioning Richard Marsden's funeral last week, because I'd wondered what happened on the day itself. And I remember the day, I mean, I never knew him, but I really liked him from Get This. And I remember on the Sunday morning when I heard the news, I was really sad. And so I'd like to thank you for just mentioning it, because it was good to hear about what happened and your gags, Tony Mark.
Well, yeah, I don't want to imply that Richard's funeral was some was a celebrity roast, but they did actually, set up I'd never seen this before at a funeral, setting up a giant TV screen and playing a best of bunch of clips. And, you know, it's pretty hard to get a laugh at a funeral. And Richard brought his own house down, so
I can remember one time that you mentioned something about the Lou Reed song "Perfect Day," and Richard Marsden said, "Oh, that'll get the party started."
No, the thing about one of the great things about doing that show with Richard is I had to edit the podcast with Matty D, of course, every week. And when you were editing it, you would just hear things that Richard had said off mic that you hadn't even heard when we were doing the show, and often that was some of the best material.
I can't hear Nickelback and not think of you.
Well, sorry about that.
Oh, dear.
I don't want to hear Nickelback.
No.
I do hear that wonderful band's name. I'm just taken back to 2 o'clock, and dare I say it, on one of the FM stations. And, it was just a great program, and Richard Marsden was a class act. And what's happened to Ed?
Well, Ed's still in commercial radio.
Oh, lucky him, huh?
He's hanging out with...
You can go and slip plates of food in under the door if you want to... help him get through this period. But,
does he play Nickelback?
Well, I don't know. I do remember Richard Marsden coming in one day with... do you remember the band Hinder?
Yeah.
Remember how...
They had one very syrupy, sort of poppy, Macarena-style hit, didn't they?
Oh, no, it was like... It was a Nickelback style.
It was sort of a heavy guitar, was it?
Richard came in and he'd been to a music department meeting where everyone was really excited because they'd got this new single by Hinder, and everyone was going, they're the new Nickelback.
Oh.
And then Richard told me the month later there was a band called Daughtry. I don't remember, they had a single, and everyone was going, they're the new Hinder.
Was it? I think probably your campaign against Nickelback in making them a joke may have even... changed, like it was like it's like with the one bullet fired in a war. Like it might have changed the way that station treated Nickelback. Do you think?
Isn't it a band the Presidents of the United States of America? I mean, why would you want to hear like Exile on Main Street when you can hear one of their albums?
Well, there you go.
Well thank you for your feedback on last week's show, and of course, he's very well missed, isn't he?
Certainly is,
Richard. As we discussed last week.
And if you want to hear a bit of Richard Marsden's work, go to iTunes and type in the magic phrase, Richard Marsden Lives, and there's a treat in store.
Hello, are you there? Am I speaking to... Hang on. Oh. What was that community radio sketch again? Hello?
This is what I'm talking about. Hello?
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 Who are we speaking to?
Matthew.
How are you?
Good. I just wanted to call up just talking about books
And because I'm a prolific, lazy novelist.
Sounds like you're on both sides of the coin.
Yes. Well, it's, you know, it's hard work, but I conceived and never wrote, never published my first book in 1990, and I've actually completed 10 books since that have never been written, never been published. And
yep.
I just wanted to take a quick moment just to shamelessly promote my next book, which...
When are you thinking of thinking up that one?
I think it'll be... I think I'll move away from writing a novel and look at an autobiography of my lifetime's work in writing.
And so when will that not be appearing on shelves?
Anytime soon.
Okay.
I've just got a war between publishers at the moment.
Well, I'm glad we could not plug it.
What was the last line of, I think, the John Clarke and Brian Doerr last night with "just as soon as we can't" was the was when the government's going to get to their next thing.
Exactly.
Very good. Thank you for
Thank
that,
you.
Matthew.
Bye-bye.
Always good to hear from a lazy novelist.
Who have we got there? Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, this is Dolly. How are you, Tony and Tony?
And Matt.
Very good. And Matt as well.
And Matt.
Yes.
Yeah, thanks, Ellie.
Hang on, I'll just take your six bite.
Hang on, what's going on there?
She's taking us off speakerphone.
But we got a dial tone. She might have...
Yeah, that sounds much better.
Hello.
I'm not very good at technology either, obviously. Press the wrong button. Here it goes.
How can we help you?
I was tuning up to talk about the lazy novelist.
Yeah.
It's just impossible when you're trying to do a real job so you can have real money.
That's right.
To find the time to write.
No, you absolutely, that is the elephant in the room in this discussion. As Tony Wilson will confirm, it's not a particularly lucrative line of work.
Well, actually, we were talking on Tuesday on Spoke, Michelle and I, about poet laureates get paid, I think it's £5,000 a year or $11,000 or something. And I thought that is a job where... It's a spectacularly small income compared to what you think.
Hang on, Matt Quatermain's actually going, how can I get this thing?
Oh, hello.
Just a couple more nice poems about Sophie Rees-Jones and you could be a chance. But but I was thinking that there are a whole lot of jobs that are surprisingly poorly paid. And a friend of mine wrote a novel and he was at a dinner party and he asked them to guess what they think he made out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And every guess was in advance, because it sold pretty well.
Right.
Every guess was in advance of $100,000.
Right.
But like most Australian novels, it sold around 4,000 copies. And if you do a publishing deal, then you get a 10% royalty on each book sold. And if they sell for $23, that's $2.30 a book. If you're writing a children's book and they sell for $23, you'll get $2.30 divided by 2, because you share your royalty. You don't cut into the publisher's cut.
No.
You share your royalty with the illustrator. So you get $1.15 a book. So if you are relying on living on your writing and you're selling a normal selling book in Australia of about $4,000 or $5,000, you're getting $1.15 for a kid's book or $2.30 for an adult book.
And even the money, the advance, you get your payback out of your royalties.
Exactly. You don't get any royalties on top of your... You've got what they say, earn out your advance. So it's called an advance on royalties. If you don't earn out, you do get to keep your $10,000 even if you don't sell that many copies. But no one gets, or very few people get, $50,000 and $100,000 and $200,000 advances.
Well, I'll explain to you. I did the book Lolly Scramble that has sold 11,000 copies. I got a $15,000 advance, which I didn't know whether that was good or bad, and I asked proper writers whether that was good, and they went, "That is amazingly good."
Yeah,
how the hell did you get that? I have, so far in 4 years, I have made a total of $24,000 from that book, and that's considered a successful book. And that's for, so that's $24,000 for a year's work, and you get into cabs and you'll get a guy going, "So mate, you got a book out, you getting any of those Harry Potter bucks here, mate?" You'd be doing all right off that, wouldn't you? And you just want to say, you are doing better driving this cab than most people who write a book. And what happens is, I think people read in the Herald Sun or whatever, they read, "Oh, Tim Winton, you know, got paid $1 million or something," and they just assume that that's what everybody's getting. And of course, how many novelists, Tony, in this country would actually be able to make a living from being a novelist? We've bored and alienated our caller. I apologise for that.
I think it'd probably be... I think there's probably 10 or 20 writers that are making a living in Australia.
Right.
And quite a few of them might be kids writers. I mean, I think Andy Griffiths would be doing pretty well. Yeah. Obviously, Tim Winton would be doing pretty well.
Bryce Courtney.
Yep.
Matthew Riley.
Matthew Riley. Who's the pretty crime woman? Who writes the... She's blonde, tall.
Tara Moss.
Tara Moss. Probably making a living. Maybe not, though.
Di Morrissey.
Making a living.
There you go.
But very difficult. Someone like Hyland, MJ Hyland, who was nominated, shortlisted for the Booker, probably still only sold 20,000 copies. So it depends whether you reckon making 60 or 100 grand for a book that's nominated for the Booker Prize is making a good living.
I have to say I've actually ripped off MJ Hyland. Quarters' missus actually gave me a copy of Carry Me Down for free. So there you go.
Really?
I hope you're happy, Quarters.
Sorry. Thanks for putting that one out there. I'll give her a ring at work and say... Tony didn't mean it.
She loaned me a book. It's not a crime, is it?
Who have we got on line one? Hello?
Hello?
Who's that?
It's Bill.
Hey, Bill.
I just, your lazy writers.
Yeah. Yep.
I think you've got to split them into sort of two categories. You know, the ones who don't write, and then you got your Tom Clancy's.
Yeah.
Who they don't write either.
Because you reckon they got teams.
They're meeting, discuss the plot, get someone else to chuff it out.
That's right. You do see a lot of that now where a novelist is actually dead and someone else has just taken over the franchise.
I've never read one of his novels, but I've played his computer game.
Oh, really? Yeah. Good stuff?
Yeah. Well, it's okay. Shooting, you know, be a spy, that sort of stuff.
Well, thank you for that, Bill. Hello? Who have we got there? Hello? Hello?
Oh. We're bored people again. I want to go for my get the poetry... bit of money on the poems.
You reckon poet laureate?
I actually wrote a.
Because you are a poet. Of course.
Well, I've dashed a couple out. I wrote one for Underbelly.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I could do it.
Sure. Let's have a poem.
Underbelly the poem. It goes. Fush and chips. Ta.
Congratulations, Matt.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
And I gave it to Carol Ann Duffy just because she gets on the A-level syllabus.
That's right. Should we be playing some music?
Oh, yes, let's play some music while we drum up. Actually, I'll just get you to mention your thoughts on mobile phones and time-saving technology.
Do you want me to do that now?
Yeah, do that now so that people can think about it whilst we play the music.
Well, there's a fantastic article appeared on Salon.com last week called Why Can't We Concentrate? Twitter and email aren't making us stupider, but they are making us more distracted. And this has been the subject of a lot of articles recently. Nicholas Carr's much discussed Is Google Making Us Stupid essay for the Atlantic Monthly, where Carr reported, this is what he reported, he found this change that had occurred recently when he was reading, and we're talking about books and novelists. Immersing myself in a book or lengthy article used to be easy, he wrote. Now my concentration often starts to drift after two or three pages. I get fidgety, lose the thread, begin looking for something else to do. I feel as if I'm always dragging my wayward brain back to the text. The author of this article on Salon, Laura Miller, says, for my own part, I now find it challenging to sit still on my sofa through the length of a feature film. The urge to, for example, jump up and check the IMDb filmography of a supporting actor is well nigh irresistible. And once I'm at the computer, why not check the email? Most of the time, I'll wind up pausing the DVD player before the end of the movie and telling myself I'll watch the rest tomorrow. Do you guys find this, that all of this new technology, which is promoted and advertised as time-saving, actually just fills in more time?
Absolutely. And I saw that the slogan for BlackBerry, because I've been trying to spend most of my week this week fixing my BlackBerry, is more time for life. That's what they call, that's their actual slogan. I would have thought exact opposite.
More time to swear at your phone, have to answer emails, send text backs, and get involved in Twitter. I mean, do you find this, Quarters?
Oh, absolutely. I spend all my time, you know, downloading some extra bit that has to go on to make it work. You know, you don't have the codec. The codec. Right, suddenly I know about codecs. I've got all this useless knowledge in my head.
And do you have, are you a mobile phone junkie?
No, not really. Just the, you know, buy one at the post office and put $20 on it.
Right.
So if you've got thoughts about whether they really are time-saving devices or time wasters, give us a call during the next track. But before we go to the next track, I am going to speak to Top Cat, who's ringing us. Top Cat, you're in Minneapolis, hey?
Yeah, I'm a regular listener, and I'm a subscriber to Triple R.
Wow, good on you.
So, you were just talking about the time wasters that are supposed to be time savers.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting here in front of the computer streaming Triple R.
Yeah.
That's a good use.
Yeah, well, you can do something else while you're listening,
sure.
I guess.
Sure. I can wash dishes or, you know, comb out the knots in the cat hair or whatever, you know, but...
Perform rudimentary surgery. There are useful things you can do, but it's not the same as checking your email. You couldn't, you know, do something...
Oh, I can do that, too, at the same time.
Okay.
I can do several things at once on the computer as long as you don't overload it. But what I called about was the digital broadcast that you were talking about before.
Yeah.
Were you talking about television and radio?
Yeah, we did sort of leap the fence at one point. I guess the television debate is more to do with the fact that there will... Well, I guess it's happening in both mediums. We have the analog switch off where... Really, I have no idea what people's grandparents, would they even, I mean, how do you find with older people?
I just bought my mum a digital box and she cannot understand it because it's another level. It's like
is this for the television then?
Yes,
television.
So the situation is Channel 31, which is a great friend of Triple R and has been a terrific part of Melbourne life and Sydney life as well for a long time. They are analog and they get more and more marginalised as more and more people go over to digital set top boxes because they're not popping up there on the digital box. So you've got to return to your analog system and run the dual system in order to get Channel 31. So they need to get over to digital as soon as possible, really.
Did the Australian government mandate the digital changeover?
Yeah. Mm.
That's the same here. And it was supposed to have occurred, the changeover was supposed to have occurred in February, but the coupons that they had available for people to apply towards set-top boxes for older televisions, they ran out of money. So people who wanted coupons... Not everyone got them, and so they've pushed back the changeover to, I think, July.
Right.
Oh, June. My housemate just said June.
And do you think, is everyone going to go over? I mean, what about those people we hear about in jokes, really, who live in a trailer park with a television set with another television set, a black and white one on the top?
On top, yeah.
Those people aren't going to make the digital changeover by July, are they?
You can buy the decoders all over the place.
Yeah.
Right.
The thing is since the government mandated it, I think that everyone should have been able to go into a retailer and get a box for free. But you have to pay for them, and that's what these coupons are for. So what it's doing is the government is basically giving money to the box manufacturers, and then the customer, the consumer, has to pay some money on top of that.
And then,
digital radio, same thing. The internet and things like iPhones are the way to go on that. I don't know anyone who has a digital receiver. I'm not going to buy one.
No.
Unless I'm forced to.
Yeah. Well, I guess if they switch it off, if you want television, then you will be forced to. That's how they'll do it.
It's about time the Australian government pulled the digital out.
Basically, what will happen is eventually Kevin Rudd will just appear on television with a television playing so you think he can dance with a gun pointed at him. Okay, do you realise how close you are to losing this? And then people will panic and then they'll get the set-top box or whatever they need to do.
Well, it's lovely to hear all the way from Minneapolis, that lovely listener, and digital media, a big issue here at Triple R as well, and I think the switch off for analog radio is further in the distance.
Yeah, it's a way off.
Because the rollout hasn't even happened yet for digital radio, has it? Or
no,
it has?
I think that Pink station's up and running, but don't panic, listeners. You don't have to get rid of your radio yet. We have had requests because we've been playing New Zealand music for a bit of Flight of the Conchords, and because, I mean... Tony Biggs, I think he's right across social issues and important issues that get people thinking. So let's have Think About It.
that they are. Collins Street, 5 p.m. What a painting it is. You've just got in the corner of the painting someone getting booked for parking in a clearway. That John Brack film painting. Before that, we heard from A Flight of the Conchords.
Yes, that's from the album, and it's a great song, but I do prefer the ending of the version on the TV show with the build it up. Why didn't they do that on the album?
I don't know.
That's one of the funniest bits in the series.
And before that, we heard, nothing, I think.
It's a lot of waffle.
Waffle.
I still feel bad about that caller who just hung up because we were talking too much.
Sorry, I didn't say goodbye to the fella from Minneapolis either. No. There's been some manners gaps so far today, and I blame the buttons. Hey, looking at the buttons, I see that I'm just a little bit louder than Matt, then you're just a little bit louder than Matt as well.
All right.
That's actually a famous tactic, isn't it?
Is it? There was an announcer who possibly you worked with, Matt, who still gets around these days, who would have his voice like a third louder than everyone else on the show.
And so, not surprisingly, when his jokes came in at the top, they seemed to be sort of to resonate more with the audience.
There you go.
I've been doing it, ladies and gentlemen. So
I'd really like to have an etiquette button. You know, just press the thank you caller.
Yeah, that's good. We need an etiquette button.
Line... Well, I'm not meant to say which line.
That's firstly.
You're showing the puppet strings.
The trouble is it's becoming a trademark for you, so people will hate it if you stop doing it.
Brad? Are you there, Brad?
Hey, good morning. How are you, gents?
Great.
Just about the mobile phones and modern technology.
Yeah.
The time consumer.
Mm.
Oh, look, I'd have to say it's a bit of a line ball, really.
Yeah. Do you feel that the time that you're saving outweighs the time that you're expending?
I think it would. And obviously, you know, there's times it makes life a lot easier and a lot more convenient, and then there's other times when it's a real pain in the butt and it's soaking up valuable time. But it's a hard one to call, isn't it?
Well, do you find that you use your mobile phone to ring up on the way somewhere to say, I'm going to be 5 minutes late? Everyone uses the mobile phone to get somewhere late, so everyone is actually always late. They just get to ring on the way.
And I don't know what we did at music festivals before mobile phones either, trying to find your friends and...
Had to make spots. With Tony, you have to make spots because you don't have a mobile phone.
Well, I don't have a mobile phone and I'm surrounded by people who do, and most of their day, it seems, is like reaching for it and just swearing. That's what they spend most of their time doing. And when you don't have one, people get very... It's like you've somehow broken the rules of society now. It's quite... Because it was 4% of people don't have mobile phones a year ago. It went down to 3%, and I think it's down to 2% now. And what people end up saying to you, because they can't work out why you don't have a phone, they go, well what's going to happen when you break down in the outback? And I go, I'm never going to go to the outback.
Is that just your rebellious streak, though, Tony? Is that just your rebellious streak?
No, it's just that I...
But if you're in Vodafone, you can't get reception in the outback.
I know, and I've seen Wolf Creek. I'm never going to go to the outback. It's not going to happen. I just remember 1996 when nobody had a mobile phone, and I don't know more people, and life hasn't changed. It feels to me, I've never felt like I really need one. I have email. I'm not anti-technology. And I don't have any children, too, which seems to be the main reason people say they have a mobile phone.
Well, they give it to their kids.
Oh, how's that going, Quarters?
No, they're 10 years old and asking about the mobile phone. No.
Really?
No. Okay. Not happening.
Well, thank you for the call, Brad. We've got Casey. Hello, Casey.
Oh, hi. Hey, Dave.
How are you? Good.
Good.
What you up to?
Yeah, I was just going to add that, I think the time consumption thing is a big, is quite, you know, I mean, depending on how much time you have to actually spend, you know, I mean, because of the internet, anything's available almost, so, yeah, you know, you can end up wasting hours and hours, you know, indefinitely on looking up stuff, on listening to stuff and getting access to stuff. I was also going to ask if you guys had heard anything about the second season, The Flight of the Conchords.
Yes, I've heard that, firstly, it's 2 episodes shorter. It's only 10 episodes.
Yep.
And the general consensus seems to be that the songs aren't as good because they, obviously, in the first series, they had a stockpile of 6 years' worth of songs that they'd been doing live. But on the other hand, that the actual storylines and the jokes and all the character stuff is better. So
and they go the Australians, apparently.
That's what I was going to say. Although, at the end of the first season, I was going, okay, they've used all their material, and I heard they used some of their like radio material for the second season. I was actually kind of impressed that the plot was more actually, you know, involved with the actual songs rather than just, you know, the plot's about getting from song to song and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, I watched the first episode, and I didn't think the songs were as good, but all the plot with Murray now working for a giant record company, it was all hilarious.
Yeah.
So, you know, let's give it a go. I think it's going to be on SBS this time.
Why did they call him Brian in the radio and Murray in the telly?
That's just one of those mysteries of comedy. Do you know, sir?
No, I don't, actually. I mean, his name's Reece Davies, so...
Reece Darby.
Oh, Darby, sorry. Yeah.
Well, it's worth tracking. If you haven't heard the original BBC radio series, it's well worth tracking down.
And they keep getting advice from Neil Finn. They bring him up and Neil tells them...
Heard that.
And, of course, the irony being that they've done far, far better than Neil Finn ever did in the charts.
Well, they have now. I don't know if they have at the time.
No, at the time. There's also a fantastic... sequence with Daniel Kitson.
Yeah.
Obviously another regular here at Triple R. And I asked him how they, because it's beautifully recorded, that radio show. All of the scenes with people just in a room, it sounds really on location. And I asked him how they recorded those scenes, and he said they would mic up a room.
Uh-huh.
Like they'd put four or five mics around the room, basically bug the room, and then push the actors in and sort of improvise for about 2 hours. Then cut it down. And Daniel Kitson said they did that scene for about 2 hours, and he thought there would be nothing they could use. And he was amazed when he heard the show.
Yeah. Wow. No. Yeah, that's taking, marking the whole place down to another level entirely.
No, it's a really... it's just a great series to listen to. The sound of it is really beautiful.
Oh, okay, I see what you're saying. I was going to say, have you plugged your own website, Tony?
I guess. Is this a good cue?
Far away, yes.
There's a new website. It's nothing too fancy. Don't go in expecting anything. Don't expect any bells and whistles, but there is
put fancy in the title, nonetheless.
The ScrivenersFancy.com is a new website which basically, rather snootily, I think, celebrates the written word. And all three of us in this room, Matt Quatermain, Tony Wilson and myself, have columns at The Fancy this week. You can read. Quarters has alerted me to an area I wasn't aware of, a new sports channel, is that right?
HD1, yeah, right. Yep, sports.
The Channel 10 thing.
Yeah,
what
yeah.
What fiasco that is.
I watch a bit of IPL cricket. I can't help it. I did it to see a bit of Warnie, who's done his hammy. He's out.
Really?
Yeah, so the Rajasthan Royals, gone. Without Warnie. Warnie was just amazing. By sheer personality, he could make his team win and bring them together. He was just, what an amazing captain he would have been.
He would have been great.
And Mr. Wilson here has supplied us with a piece which didn't appear in The Age. Is that right? It was written.
And it was untitled. And so Tony Martin can actually lay credit to what's ended up being the best thing in the article, which is the title, I Do Not Like That Sam I Am.
I Do Not Like You.
And it's a Sam Newman bash piece that was written at the time of the Mannequin debacle last year. But because there's been a decision made by the Broadcasting Tribunal, that's been given the CPR treatment, and it's back there as visiting Scrivener this week.
And select locations, I guess.
Yeah.
And you were saying, Tony, that you're worried, even by publishing that piece, that you're adding fuel to the fire.
It is. I thought an appropriate title for it would be Every Word Makes Him Stronger, because there's a sort of category of entertainer, in inverted commas, in Australian media where they're almost uncriticisable because their entire modus operandi is to generate criticism. And that's how they become the personality types that they are. And Kyle Sanderlands is the other one I mentioned in the piece. Mm. And so that if you say anything, all you're really doing is what they want.
Yeah, because you're adding to their whole, loaded crap that they're talking about.
And so your options are either to ignore them and allow this kind of waft of shit to go through the media because they are good at getting a voice piece. Or you try and find ways of getting them off air.
Yeah.
And short of violence, there doesn't seem to be one. So
I guess there's always the Stephen Colbert school of dealing with Bill O'Reilly from Fox News, and you put up a whole show that just deconstructs what Bill O'Reilly does.
Yeah, and arguably, I guess a show like Frontline may have done a bit of that to current affairs, although to me it seems like it's still going fine. You know?
I remember when Tony was doing some interviews, Tony Martin was doing some interviews, some Lolly Scramble, and I heard him say how he was unimpressed at how unaffected FM radio had been in the wake of Martin Malloy. I think you mentioned that they were still doing Battle of the Sexes, although they called it something else occasionally and got offended if you compared it to them.
Yeah.
No, it was always... Well, we were doing a slightly different kind of radio, and it was never... And I thought when we stopped doing it, everyone will do that kind of show, but it was seen as a monstrous aberration that could never have happened, and we found that it didn't matter how successful the show got, you would always have meetings with management where they would go, yeah, but if you would just do it our way, it would be even more so. Kylie Minogue on instead of Dave Graney, it would be even more successful.
And so I mean, in that context, how do you feel about, you know, I mean, I don't want you to to badmouth anyone, but I mean, about shows like Hamish and Andy that are so geared towards, you know, integration of all medias rather than actually, you know, really just going for the comedy.
Well, I've just never understood what the phrase cross-platform means, because it's all about Hamish and Andy. I love Hamish and Andy because they're not bunging anything on. It's not like they've gone in and said, let's do this to be more successful. They're actually just doing what they want to do, and it's working.
I saw them at Lord Summer's Camp at the age of 21 or 20, performing to an audience of 150 kids on camp, and they were just as funny as they are on a national radio show.
It was the integration stuff
There's nothing cynical about those guys, but that whole thing of filming, I mean, you must have had this quarters where people go, hey, what if we filmed the radio show?
Yeah, we've got that stuff up on the site.
Yeah, cross-platform, I thought that's just what you get when the train's late.
Well, I think, thank you, dear listener, you appear to have sparked our switchboard, and we've got plenty of calls to get through.
One other question I had for Tony Martin, actually.
Yes?
Do you think you'll actually write Wankers Away?
Oh, Wankers Away. That was a joke I think I made on this show where it was about... I claimed I was writing a book called Wankers Away, which is about what was going on at Triple M. And I actually... I don't know if I would need to team up with a journalist, I think, because it's one of those things where if you were to write that book, I could certainly write a book about my own experience, but I think you would need to place it in a larger context, because I think what happened to us and what happened to George McEncroe recently, what happened to Marty Sheargold, what happened to Peter Grace, what happened to Matt Quatermain, is it's a symptom of a larger thing, which is dumbing down, which is what's going on in radio. But that is a symptom of fear, and the fear is that the radio is coming to an end.
And they know nothing of chemistry. It wouldn't get you through high school what they know about chemistry. They just go, all right, some from Sydney, someone from Melbourne. There you go, have a show.
That's right, put those two. I actually had a guy, and you were involved in this, the group program director came to see me, and he said, look, he was always coming into our office and looking at our board where it had a list of guests, and he'd be sort of talking to us, but you could see he was looking at the board thinking, is there someone I could get to do a pilot? And he said, you know, is there anyone you've got on your show, mate, who we should be doing a pilot with? And I'm going, well, you know, the worst thing that people do in radio is that they get people who don't know each other and have never worked together but who are individually successful and go, hey, if we put them together, that'll be a hit show. And he goes, no, mate, we don't do that, we don't do that here anymore. And then without a beat, he went, do you reckon Tony Wilson and Cal Wilson know each other? You go, well, because they've got the same surname. So there is a lot of that. So I'm certainly qualified, I think, to talk about that. But the wider issue, which is the future of radio, and, you know, because the internet is here, there's internet radio, there's podcasting, but people don't quite know how to make money off it yet.
No.
And so
there's the real risk that it all gets very, very free, isn't it?
That's right.
And the guys they put in charge are head of sales.
That's right.
You know, whoever does the best in sales gets to be the head of the station, and you're going, you've put a salesman in charge. You've got the guy from Meyer telling you about art.
Or somebody from the AFL. That's what we'd always get at Triple M. The station manager was always someone from the AFL. And you'd have these meetings and go, Right, if I could use a football metaphor, and you'd say, could just one time, could somebody use a radio metaphor? Could we maybe talk about radio? Could we talk about the listeners just one time instead of marketing?
P1s or P2s?
We've got Craig on line not saying the number anymore becomes slick. Hello, Craig, you there? Hello.
Hey, Matt. How are you all?
I'm very well.
Tony, why didn't Martin Malloy follow on from Bull Twang? So I'd like to know, first of all.
Pardon?
Bull Twang.
Oh, yeah, Bull Twang. Well, that was a show.
Early 90s? I'm trying to think now.
That was a show I was involved in literally 20 years ago in 1990, yeah. Mm.
The Sunday show.
Yeah.
Yes, that was a nice precursor to what you did later on. Mr. Wilson.
Yeah?
How do you think the orchid is going in
Russia?
In Moscow, yes.
The orchid, for those who don't know, is Sam Pang, so named because, like a hothouse flower, he likes things, conditions to be perfect. 21 and still is another one of his nicknames. And so I guess it's still is it a late spring there? So it could get a bit chilly in the mornings for him. There'll be a pretty tough production schedule that he'll be having to meet. That'll be hurting him slightly. But I think he's one of the great untapped talents in media. I say untapped, of course, we've tapped him brilliantly for 5 years. Yeah. But really, mainstream Australia is about to get a flash of those beautiful white Pang teeth.
We're all off to Pang town.
And it is going to become a... it's going to become I was going to try and make extravaganza out of Pang, but I don't...
Pangza?
Yeah, something like that is what we're about to go into.
Pangstravaganza.
Yeah, a Pangstravaganza is about to begin in Australian media. He'll do a great job on Saturday. There'll be lots of angry letters to the Green Guide that we can all enjoy next week about the absence of Terry Wogan. But really, it's the first step in television that I think will go for a long time.
And also, I'd just like to add, guys, Bud Tingwall.
Very
great,
sad.
Great loss.
Oh, yeah. And I remember he was one of the voices on Thunderbirds, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. Was he?
Oh, I thought it was Ray Barrett, but no.
Oh, Ray Barrett, you might be right. Sorry.
No, I'm. No, look, we'll get in trouble. I was sure that Bud Tingwall. He was. Who I remember when I was a kid, Bud Tingwall was in the Miss Marple films. There were four of them with Margaret Rutherford as Miss Marple and Murder Most Foul, things like that.
Yep.
And Bud Tingwall was always the cynical policeman. So he was, Miss Marple, please leave this to the professional. It was always like that.
Well, thank you very much for your call. We've got Mason. Are you there still, Mason? Hello?
Yeah, g'day. How you going, boys?
Good.
Good. I just wanted to call and pass along my condolences for Charles Bud Tingwall as well.
It's a sad day for those who hadn't heard. I think the very short reports we've seen say that it was a prostate cancer issue that's ended up in the great Australian actor dying at the age of 87, was it, Tony?
86.
86.
And I just wondered, Tony Martin, whether you had any humorous anecdotes from his time working with the Piss Weak Kids.
Well, see, I never was involved in that. That was done by Tom and Robin Santo, and Jane used to do all that stuff. So I never actually met Bud Tingwall till years later. But as I was saying earlier, it's very hard to find good actors who can act badly when you want them to. And Bud was very good at that. And I think it was like being let out of jail for him to be allowed to act badly on that thing. But I wouldn't like to pretend that I worked with him on that, because I actually never even met him when we were filming that. But I certainly enjoyed it.
I missed the first bit of your show, so I guess that you must have talked about it already.
What we'll do is we'll redo everything we said
in the next 14 minutes, but we'll say it very fast.
If I can see the transcripts, that'll be great.
No worries. Okay. Well, thank you very much for that call. We have Teague on the line. Hello, Teague. You there? No? Let's try this one. Hello? Who's there? Anyone? Hello? There's someone there.
Is there?
Yeah. But just breathing heavily.
Yeah.
And got their mobile phone out on the doorstep, going to get us on the way to the car.
We're all quite
Hello, is anyone there? Jeff?
Yeah, hi, Tony.
Is it Jeff?
Yeah, it's Jeff.
Oh, brilliant. How are you?
Good, thanks. Now, Bud Tingwall did do voices for the Thunderbirds.
Thank God.
Gerry Anderson liked to use Australian actors because they could do both English and American accents.
Oh, right. And are you...
Actually, just watching a Homicide episode I got on DVD last night.
Wow! So how did you?
He was Inspector Reg Lawson.
And how? And was he assassinated?
Don't know.
I can't remember if he was assassinated or no. It was Alwyn Kurtz.
Alwyn Kurtz. Yeah, it was he? Yeah.
Was assassinated. Then Bud Tingwall took over from him.
That's right, yes. Yeah. So these were the first episodes in colour, and there's some brilliant shades of brown.
Oh, well, that's it. People remember the classic cast as being Leonard Teal, Olwyn Kurtz, and George Mallaby with the brown suit. But in fact, there was only like about 11 episodes after it went to colour before Kurtz was shot dead. So it's actually, people remember, what they remember as being something that was on for years was only on for 11 weeks.
Yes, well, the episode I watched last night was John Stanton in a lovely sort of mauve suit in his Valiant cop car chasing a young Gary McDonald on a motorcycle.
Oh, nice.
Around the back streets of Collingwood, and the way he threw that Valiant around the cobblestone laneways was pretty spectacular.
Mm. Bill Hunter once told me that he was shot dead 16 times in 16 different episodes as 16 different characters on Homicide. And
now,
he said,
just quickly, when I was a kid in the 70s, Bud Tilman lived around the corner from where I lived in Borwin. And me and a mate of mine, we threw dirt bombs into his swimming pool.
What a beautiful tribute.
Yeah.
Did he tell you off? Did he tell you off very sonorously?
He said, what are you pesky kids doing? Get out of here.
Ooh. Ooh.
But it wasn't a reflection of the man. We just wanted to throw dirt bombs in someone's swimming pool.
Yeah. Well, Jeff, to hear, we needed your Bud Tingwell anecdotes because we were running a little dry ourselves. So I very much appreciate the call.
No worries.
And that actually ends our board of callers, Tony and Matt. And we've got a giveaway prize.
Oh, fantastic.
Triple R presents Ockerville River. Sunday the 17th of May, that would be this Sunday, at Billboard.
Great band.
Renowned for their vivid lyrical imagery, infectiously bittersweet melodies, and intensely passionate live performances, Ockerville River are returning to Australia for the fourth time, the first since the release of their remarkable 2008 album, The Stand-Ins.
Stand-Ins, yes.
You've got it, Matt?
Yeah, it's a great album. I saw them first time out, Ockerville River. That was great. Great night.
Well,
are we going to hear some of that now?
Yeah, I've got Ockerville River.
And then Maddie has brought us in some very rare Melbourne comedy, and we can hear a bit of that.
Well, given Matt's here and he's an Ockerville River fan, can you pluck a track, or are you going to go with the one I'm going with, which is track two? You're welcome to change it to your favourite.
Yeah, track two's fine. Yeah.
Excellent. It's pretty democratic here in the studio. If there's more than one objection to a track, I just switch it over. But here we are, Ockerville River. And, of course, if you could call now on 9388 1027, we're giving away a double pass for the gig at Billboard on Sunday the 17th of May. So, hit the phone lines. Good on you, Dave Butterworth. Get along to that. We had a giveaway for that gig earlier in the show. We had another giveaway just before the previous track, and the clue is it was an Ockerville River track, track two from their album, which is called Unless It Kicks. The winner going along on Sunday, the 17th of May, to Billboard is Sarah, and she is going to have a terrific time, we gather. If she doesn't, ring in and tell us what went wrong.
That's right. Slightly off mic, sorry.
Doing that trick again.
It's a recurring problem of mine. What else have you got written down there about a venue, Tony Wilson, here on
this
the Two
Sunday,
Tones?
The Totes having its last night.
Oh, really? It's
very sad.
How what? Can that be?
It's gone.
Well, it just says Totes last night on Sunday. Well, to me, I haven't heard anything of it closing down, but Rachel has given me a big poster here that says Totes last night on Sunday.
Oh, they're not turning it into apartments, are they?
Oh, no.
You know.
Anyway, I'm sure if that is true, it's very sad.
But just with all the bands who played there living there. Just
many Triple R listeners will want to get along on Sunday to be a part of that. You guys got some stuff?
Matt Quatermain is with us here on the Two Tones, filling in for Tony Biggs, hopefully back next week. Matt Quatermain is part of a fine new comedy night every Friday night at the Hampton RSL in Hampton in Holyrood Street. And from kicking off from 8:30.
Yeah, a bit of improv night, which you beautifully pointed out in your Scrivener's article, that not only do we improv on the night, but we improv how we put the whole show together.
That's right. That's right. There is a fairly graphic account of how the night works at the scrivenersfancy.com website I mentioned earlier, which I'd like to point out is not any kind of money-making venture.
No.
It's nobody's being paid. It's just a bit of harmless fun, and the advertising that's on there is just for the people who write on the thing. It's not a disguised commercial venture.
It's a spot to write without kind of editors telling you what you have to write. It's a chance to kind of get out and for you to write something that you really want to write.
Yeah, there you go. No, because I was asked to write a column for a major daily newspaper, and they didn't like it. So that's what sort of started.
You should stuff it. Become a major daily newspaper.
Yeah, bugger it.
Weekly, and I won't get paid.
Yeah.
And it's a magnificent design, the Scrivener's Fancy. It's kind of like an old, I imagine it's what the New York Times looked like sort of 80 years ago.
No pictures,
just that sense of dense broadsheet.
If you don't like the articles, you can at least enjoy the fonts. That's how I feel. And since Maddie's with us, of course, certainly a lot of people would recall the work of The Empty Pockets, which was yourself and Matt Parkinson.
Yep.
And you have brought in a very nostalgic Melbourne album.
Yeah, had a look at it. It's from 96. It's an SB Comedy album. We're a couple of the guys who started the whole SB thing, so we were down there and got a bit of a track to play for. Brought it in for Willow because I like to differentiate between the Tonys. It's Willow and Marto.
Yeah,
I brought this in for Willow, who's a footy fan. This is our footy call. You will notice that it's that old,
right? So this is an interesting thing because you're making predictions essentially,
predictions of football.
Can see whether this came true.
Yeah, because in the intro there it says, you know, football will sound like this by the year 2000. That's how old this piece is.
Oh. Here we go.
We love our sports heroes.
Oh, yeah.
Elevate them. But and that's what makes them so vulnerable to sponsorship. That's what's spoiling sport in this country. Too much sponsorship.
Yeah,
money.
I have heard that Jeff Bennick is now sponsored by Coke, and they've changed their slogan from "you can't beat the feeling" to "you can't feel the beating."
I reckon it's going to get well out of hand. I reckon we're going to get to the stage where every player in the league has his own sponsor. And by that stage, a game of footy will sound like this.
G'day and welcome to Coles' New World of Football. I'm John Boy Farrelly.
I'm Foolish Barry Maguire.
Today's match comes to you live from the Ovaltine Oval in the Maxwell House Coffee Grounds. And your umpire is Umpire Barry Umpire.
Umpire bounces the ball. McEwen's Hardware hammers it down and scooped up by Colgate Toothpaste, showing plenty of confidence as he bounces the ball once, twice. Beautiful bit of shepherding by the Wool Marketing Board. Save Colgate from getting pasted there. Colgate squeezes out a hand pass to Australia Post, who sends it deep into the half forward line.
Oh! Exxon Valdez has filled the mark.
It's getting pretty greasy out there. Exxon Valdez, normally a very slick player, but Arnott's Biscuits was there to pick up the crumbs. A delightful chip pass on to Samboy, cheese and onion, but the flavours really hit him and down he goes. The umpire's awarding a free kick to Samboy, who seems a bit ruffled by that. Remonstrating with the umpire is Kit Kat, but he's not having a bar of it.
Samboy kicks downfield. Ansett Airline flies over the pack, but Bernie's Plumbing Scissors tats it down to Victor Muller, who's been best on ground all day. Not a very high kick from Victor, bit of a daisy cutter, edging the boundary. The solo man paddles it back into Sony Walkman in the pocket. Umpire's blown the whistle for a free kick.
The free's going to Nanda Pastor, who's really gone off the boil and looks a bit drained. Nanda Pastor, the spiral punt into the goal square. Whoa! Blue Tack comes down with a big mark. The landlord won't be happy about that one. Blue Tack lines up his kick for goal and it's straight through the middle. Goal umpire Superglue does not move from the spot.
And that free kick behind play to Nanda Pastor is because Kellogg's All-Brand just went straight through him.
Normally the perfect player, not too heavy, not too light.
Mate! I don't care what you say, All-Brand gives me the shits. Back in the centre, umpire bounces the ball. Oil of Ulam palms it down to IKEA, who's just come off the bench. IKEA looks for the lead from Cambrook, I think it is. Plugs it to Cambrook, who goes wide to Kentucky Fried on the wing. What a nuggety player, what a seasoned professional.
I wonder what his secret is, you know.
Oh, look at that, he's getting up the bottom of that 12-piece pack. And no wonder he's down, he's been charged by American Express. Harold! Oh, it's on for two, he's young and old now.
In comes Massey Ferguson with a haymaker, and Fairstar, the fun ship, has been decked.
Hill's Hoist has got the clothesline on Silly Posture beating. He's copped him right in the back. He'll be leaving the ground on a stretcher.
It's back to the futon for him.
And scores just through from the Davis Cup. Australia has defeated Ansell Condon's 3-0.
That's all from Carl's New World of Football. Thanks for listening.
Matt Quatermain. Wow. Together.
That's what life would have been like in the year 2000.
Yeah. With Matt Parkinson. Who would have thought Ruffles chips would go by the wayside? I thought you were safe with them.
Ansett Airlines was in there.
Very sad. In the sense, I think Ruffles are well missed. I've never been one of these country kettles and whatever else. But,
fancy chip.
It was Empty Pockets recorded live at
The ESPY.
At the ESPY.
96.
Wow.
Fantastic.
And this half right here, you can see him in action with Tim Smith, Simon Rogers, and, of course, Andrew Goodwin at the Hampton RSL from 8:30 tonight in Hampton.
We are 1 minute to 12. We've got what's on after 12?
I'll go over to the wall.
I've just had a mental blank. I've seen him now, though. Ennio Styles with styling. As he walks past, how do you like the fact that I'm down to the requiring visual cues? Like, if I can't see the next announcer, I can't remember who it is. It's Ennio Styles with Stylin, as usual, midday on a Friday. But we've also got the RMIT news before that. We should also mention Biggsy.
Yes, Tony Biggs, hopefully back next week.
Yeah,
not confirmed yet, but all the best to him if
he's
listening.
He is better than he was last week. So we're on the up and up, Biggsy, and we're thinking of you, and hope that you really are here next Friday to in your rightful spot.
A few people wondering where they can read Tony Wilson's piece about Sam Newman. TheScrivenersFancy.com is the site to visit.
Because you are... Is .com you don't have to pay for and .com.au you do?
I don't know. That
was a decision that was taken out of your hands?
Young people are handling that for me. I don't know. Is that really?
I don't know. I think you do pay a small amount, like $100 a year or something, to .com.au. But I think .com, they just hand them out if you can find one that isn't already sat on.
Isn't it time to drop the www now? Why do people even persist with that?
It's really annoying when you get a site that doesn't recognize... You know how most of them allow you to type it in either way?
Right.
But some are strict still that require the www.
Mm.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
Like the World Wrestling Federation?
Well, I think so. They wish they could have that. No, they were WWF, weren't they? Yeah. Now they're WWE. But yeah, like fanfooty.com.au.
Right.
Don't put that in. Put in www.fanfooty.com.au.
Is that what happens there?
Yeah, you won't go to the right site if you don't put in the www.
There's been quite a lot of football in the news this week. I haven't really been following it, but...
again.
What's going on with that Reg Regan bloke? I haven't followed.
Yeah. That's... I think they've... I had a beer with him at the World Cup.
Right.
Don't really have anything to say on the actual issue. It's just poisonous stuff. The problem of maleness, as in if you don't allow women in. Yeah. So if you have a situation where you just have men interacting the whole time, then life falls apart. And that's,
not on this program, I'd like to point out. But, you know, what is interesting to me is seeing A Current Affair trumpeting their massive rating success with the Matthew Johns interview, like, yes, this sexual assault is a winner.
Yeah.
We need more of this. Isn't it fantastic?
Yeah.
Reminds
me of the Siege episode of Frontline, which I watched two nights ago.
Oh, really?
They had champagne after the Siege.
The ending of that, which is what everyone remembers, that was actually cut out when it was shown in New Zealand because there'd been one of our triennial massacres.
Right.
And so it just didn't end properly.
Well, we are going to end properly with a big
trumpet. On the massacre story. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
And on that
Matt
cheery
Quatermain,
note.
Thank you for coming in and joining
us.
Thank
you, Willow Mutter.
Tony Martin, been two wonderful weeks, and we look forward to you being back on. I'm sure you'll get a party show gig at some point over the next couple of months.
I'll be back.
And you and I are always stalking around in the background looking for fills. So
yeah, it's called Floaters. We are the Floaters.
Yep. So we may be hearing you back on Triple R soon. As I mentioned about half an hour ago, coming up now is Ennio Styles with Stylin. But first, the RMIT news.